Among Garden City's animals are two gray tomcats who are always together. Thin, dirty strays with strange and clever habits. The chief ceremony of their day is performed at twilight. First, they trot the length of Main Street, stopping to scrutinize the engine grills of parked automobiles, particularly those stationed in front of the two hotels, the Windsor and Warren. For these cars, usually the property of travelers from afar, often yield what the bony, methodical creatures are hunting. Slaughtered birds. Crows, chickadees, and sparrows, foolhardy enough to have flown into the path of oncoming motorists. Using their paws as though they are surgical instruments, the cats extract from the grills every feathery particle. Having cruised Main Street, they invariably turn the corner at Main and Grand, then lope along toward Courthouse Square, another of their hunting grounds, and a highly promising one on the afternoon of Wednesday, January 6th, for the area swarmed with Finney County vehicles that had brought to town part of the crowd populating the square. The crowd started forming at 4 o'clock, the hour that the county attorney had given as the probable arrival time of Hickok and Smith. Since the announcement of Hickok's confession on Sunday evening, newsmen of every style had assembled in Garden City. Representatives of the major wire services, photographers, newsreel and television cameramen, reporters from Missouri, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Texas, and of course, all the principal Kansas papers. 20 or 25 men altogether. Many of them had been waiting 3 days without much to do except interview the service station attendant James Spohr, who, after seeing published photographs of the accused killers, had identified them as customers to whom he'd sold $3.06 worth of gas the night of the Holcomb tragedy. It was the return of Hickok and Smith that these professional spectators were on hand to record, and Captain Gerald Murray of the Highway Patrol had reserved for them ample space on the sidewalk fronting the courthouse steps. The steps the prisoners must mount on their way to the county jail, an institution that occupies the top floor of the 4-story limestone structure. One reporter, Richard Parr of the Kansas City Star, had obtained a copy of Monday's Las Vegas Sun. The paper's headline raised rounds of laughter. Fear lynch mob awaiting return of killer suspects. Captain Murray remarked, "Don't look much like a necktie party to me." Indeed, the congregation in the square might have been expecting a parade or attending a political rally. High school students, among them former classmates of Nancy and Kenyon Clutter, chanted cheerleader rhymes, bubbled bubblegum, gobbled hot dogs and soda pop. Mothers soothed wailing babies. Men strode about with young children perched on their shoulders. The Boy Scouts were present, an entire troop. And the middle-aged membership of a women's bridge club arrived en masse. Mr. J.P., Jap Adams, head of the local Veterans Commission office, appeared, attired in a tweed garment so oddly tailored that a friend yelled, "Hey, Jap, what you doing wearing ladies' clothes?" For Mr. Adams, in his haste to reach the scene, had unwittingly donned his secretary's coat. A roving radio reporter interviewed sundry other townsfolk, asking them what, in their opinion, the proper retribution would be for the doers of such a dastardly deed. And while most of his subjects said gosh or gee whiz, one student replied, "I think they ought to be locked in the same cell for the rest of their lives. Never allowed any visitors. Just sit there staring at each other till the day they die." And a tough, strutty little man said, "I believe in capital punishment. It's like the Bible says, an eye for an eye. And even so, we're 2 pair short." As long as the sun lasted, the day had been dry and warm. October weather in January. But when the sun descended, when the shadows of the square's giant shade trees met and combined, the coldness as well as darkness numbed the crowd. Numbed and pruned it. By 6 o'clock, fewer than 300 persons remained. Newsmen, cursing the undue delay, stamped their feet and slapped frozen ears with ungloved, freezing hands. Suddenly, a murmuring arose on the south side of the square. The cars were coming. Although none of the journalists anticipated violence, several had predicted shouted abuse. But when the crowd caught sight of the murderers, with their escort of blue-coated highway patrolmen, it fell silent, as though amazed to find them humanly shaped. The handcuffed men, white-faced and blinking blindly, glistened in the glare of flash bulbs and floodlights. The cameramen, pursuing the prisoners and the police into the courthouse and up three flights of stairs, photographed the door of the county jail slamming shut. No one lingered, neither the press corps nor any of the townspeople. Warm rooms and warm suppers beckoned them, and as they hurried away, leaving the cold square to the two gray cats, the miraculous autumn departed too. The year's first snow began to fall.